Hi, how is how's the bebe?
Oh, she's great.
Aww.
She's going through some times right
Some
now, and
changes, yeah.
the emergence of teeth,
Oh,
was
she's gonna be a
brutal.
little vamp. She's
Yeah,
vamping
she's
out.
graduating. She'd be
Hell yeah.
enrolling in Sunnydale preschool right here.
Sunnydale daycare.
Oh yeah,
That's
daycare.
so cute.
She's
I love that
great.
idea. It's like
Do
Muppet Babies.
you...
Stuffy babies.
Buffy babies, oh
Buffy
my god.
tiny little Spike. Oh my God. Why hasn't anyone, you know what? Giles's nanny. Ugh.
That's
Yeah, I would totally watch like an animated series
I'm
that's
loving
Giles the
this.
Nanny. Absolutely.
This was
Buffy
a
babies.
billion-dollar idea, and if
Yeah.
anybody is listening to this
Fucking.
for right now and steals it from us,
Yeah,
you're
TM, TM,
dead.
TM. No, what you have to do, Kate, is you have to write down the idea and mail it in a letter to yourself, and that makes it
Okay, I'll
official.
be back later. That's true. That's right.
I
SAG
gotta go.
rules.
I gotta
SAG
go,
rules,
guys.
yeah.
Do you know what I realized recently?
What?
I don't know any baby milestone ages. Like, I don't know. Like, you said teeth are coming out, and I was like, okay, so what? She's like three.
10. She's turning 10.
I was
They
like,
happen so fast.
yeah,
Yeah,
that does seem
I don't have a
really
fucking clue.
fast.
I don't know when they learn to walk or talk. Like, I don't have a fucking clue. Like, I was born like fully formed out of a briefcase, like fucking It
Athena.
was the
I just sprang
gentleman's
out of my mom's head.
doctor's bag. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't have a fucking clue.
Yeah, the
That's
baby
amazing, honestly.
milestones, it takes I didn't know any of them either, because I spent plenty of time around my sister's kids and very involved in their life or whatever, but the baby stuff, just it goes so fast. She was
Yeah.
not able to sit up on her own a week and a half ago, and now she quite literally demands to be sat up by herself so she can kind of just
Wow.
like play with her. At this point, it's plastic fruits and vegetables.
Oh, that's the
She
her
likes
favorite
that's the hot
fruit
thing
or
now.
vegetable.
Yeah, I guess I should say groceries, because her favorite is a chicken wing, which is
But baby.
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's a baby. That's a baby that's from the South, I tell you what.
she's got good taste already. Yeah, Alabama born.
Alabama baby, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Incredible.
Oh, good stuff. This has been Baby Talk.
Woo! Buffy babies.
Buffy babies. Welcome to Fangs for the Memories, where, oh my God, guys, Ben is Glory. Glory
What?
is Ben.
Wait, 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 wait.
No.
Holy
Holy
make
shit.
that doesn't make any sense. You're
That's why he
they're
wears dresses
friends?
so often. I thought he was just like a really bad drag queen.
Wait,
I thought they were
they're
roommates. Oh
Oh
my God, they were
my
roommates.
God, they were roommates.
Oh, we are on a tear already, I tell you what. My name is Leslie, and my pronouns are they, them, and I live in South Philadelphia, where also resides my co-host Kate.
In the same room.
We're in the
We
same room
share.
together,
We
man.
have bunk beds.
Call the
I
top.
sleep on the bottom.
Yay,
Oh, perfect. Yeah, see, we've been
worked
doing it for
out.
years. I'm Kate. My pronouns are she, her, or they, them. And like we said, we live in the same dorm in South Philadelphia in bunk beds.
Yeah, we've got a
Yeah.
color-coded tie system to put on the doors when we want
Yep.
to hang, so
Yep.
you know what's going on.
Exactly.
And we also have a guest this
Yay.
episode returning for, I think this is your third time.
I think so.
Kyle.
Hi, my name is Kyle. My pronouns are he and him, and I live in West Boston, also known as
the somewhere nearby the construction site where they filmed the finale for this season. So watch out for falling right. Watch out for falling scaffolding.
That's true.
Falling people and portals portals to an infinite number of other dimensions.
Yeah, portals to a big ass dragon. Burp out a dragon.
Falling Tony winning musical theater actors. Just fall from the sky.
Destroyed so unceremoniously.
Yeah, really.
After so much fanfare.
Believe it.
We're gonna talk about Gold Grace so much.
Oh my god, yeah, I got a lot to say. Okay.
I know.
Let's jump into it. I'm pumped. Okay. I'm ready. All about it. What was our first episode? It was
The Weight of the World. We're so pumped we're not doing vibes.
No, fuck it. My vibes are fine. My vibes are okay.
Yeah, that's fine. We're so excited. All right. The Weight of the World. Our penultimate episode. Buffy. Woo, this is like, I like how this starts. Buffy slips into catatonia after Glory kidnaps Dawn and
Catatonia is my favorite Eastern European country.
Please welcome to the stage, Catatonia.
Ah! I love that. Yeah, Buffy is slipping into her drag act, Catatonia, after Glory kidnaps Dawn and prepares to bring about the end of the world. So Willow uses her Wicca talents to reach Buffy deep inside her innermost secrets and subconscious fears.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That turned sexy at the end. I don't know what that's
Sorry.
About.
Well, it was about her innermost secrets.
Yeah.
And also her fears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is technically part one of a two-parter.
Yeah.
And it's just chock-a-block of excellent stuff. We got a lot of, like, good nuggets in this one, I feel like.
Yeah, I brought with me my cartoon hammer, my most sensible top, and my murder pillow.
Yes!
I'm ready to tell everyone to go home and do their homework.
The murder pillow
was... Part of the thing, my general, my vibe check is these two episodes of television, because they go so wildly from the most intense cable YA melodrama you've ever seen to literally bonking people over the head with a hammer over and over and over again.
Yeah,
in a way,
like a fucking two character.
It's so perfect and special to me, and it's why I like this show so much, is their complete disregard for any total sort of like tonal symmetry, and instead just kind of just letting it play out as it's supposed to. I jump ahead too far to the incredible 30 minute fight scene. At the
it's so long. Throw everything you got,
and it's so great. And there's like, I love how you can. My favorite part about it is that you can tell that it's a certain kind of TV show, because the drama that they're bringing is really intense. But in that fight scene, you can tell that there's not that many people involved. There's a lot of people who are like taking water breaks on the side, waiting for their turn to enter. It has a very short.
Yeah.
It's very Power Rangers, and I kind of love that idea.
Yeah.
I think it's good, and more people should do it.
Yeah, it's like, okay, throw the minions in now, and there's three.
Yeah, you know.
Okay, Glory,
so
back.
Sick. Exactly. Yeah, I'm so sick of this like messy, blurry CGI, like DC Marvel. I can't tell like what is even fucking happening because there's so much going on screen. It's like I want to see the like 3 to 6 months of rehearsals it took in the studio of them doing like fight choreography, like. You know,
yeah,
I
like
want
there's
it to
a
be
dance.
Telegraphed by their fists, you know, the work
it's
that they put in.
It's almost, Leslie, like musical comedy. don't know.
I'm not even going
to choreograph.
I'm not even going to respond.
All right, we're not going to talk about it yet.
And I won't take the bait.
This is really like the cabaret of Buffy.
I hate both of you people. God. I share an intimate secret with the two of you.
You told me you already told the entire podcast how you feel about Joel Grey.
It's true. That's true. But to be fair, nobody fucking listens to this show.
This is when, like, JoelGreyFans.com discover this podcast and lose their shit.
It's like, one of us, Google Gobble. Anyway, no, there's some like really good moments in this. I love the sort of, so the overarching thing is that like now as it's getting closer to the time of the reckoning or whatever the fuck, Glory and Ben, who are two entities like in the same body, are they say like the veil or the magic that is keeping them separated is starting to weaken. So they are kind of bleeding into each other. So Glory keeps starting to feel like developing human feelings, and having her like reckon with that is so very interesting.
I love it. I love that she's cool. Like just disgusted by this like meat sack. Like she calls Ben a meat sack that she has to, you know, like inhabit, and it just disgusts her like how humanity deals with like their feelings.
Yeah, she's like, you guys are controlled by all of this, like, emotional moop, like, slaves. And it's like, yeah, kind of.
And it's fine. It's good.
Yeah, and, like, that's, you know, that's what separates us from animals. And the fact that we have, like, opposable thumbs and stuff.
Yeah, and, like, Glory is just, like, well, and I guess, yeah, as they keep, like, morphing back and forth, like, Ben can feel all the people that Glory has killed.
Yeah, her like bloodlust, like,
and destroying him.
Yeah.
And then like Dawn is just watching this whole thing happen and like doesn't quite know what to do about it. Like
no clue.
Yeah.
We should talk a few things.
I want to talk about Scrappy Doo. For a while. I'm obsessed with the Dawn character being introduced and the progression, the character development over the season as Buffy gets to know her new sister daughter, as I've been calling her.
Oh, I like that.
Because that's basically I mean, the sort of the relationship. Like once Buffy's mom passes, she immediately again goes into the closet and finds her most sensible tops, and and starts telling people to do their homework. Dawn just has this sort of like very like, I can't remember that actress's name, but I love her.
Michelle Trachtenberg.
Yes, thank you. She reminds me of, she's this very, you know, in a time and place and culture kind of actor. So when you watch her, you go, oh, I forgot how things were. But I really liked the strange sort of out of body experience watching Dawn move through all of this stuff. And like, I like it as a commentary kind of on the, I imagine the writers were maybe doing this as like a sitcom trope, a commentary on the sitcom trope, introducing a character or swapping out a character in the middle, like the Roseanne effect.
Right.
That kind of thing, which I thought was really, as usual with Buffy, very silly and also clever. And so, yeah, I thought this is it's really the inverse Scrappy Doo, right? Because Scrappy Doo was introduced in like or at least is seen as an act of desperation, in an attempt to try and attract younger viewers to a show. And Dawn has this like, she doesn't fall into the same trap. She's not annoying. You wouldn't think that a character spending an entire season looking confused would work, but it does. And I think it could only work on this show. Just like, what? or going between confused and obstinate, which was really funny. That's why I thought their relationship early in the season seemed very mother-daughter. And then when I remembered what happened
right,
and how,
yeah.
how things uh-huh. evolved as things went on, I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I see. That's I see why, how they yeah. wrote this.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I feel like when I first watched this show, I thought Dawn was extremely annoying. And I feel like it has something to do with age. Mm-hmm. That, like, I was Buffy's age and saw her as, like, a little sister.
Yeah.
And now I am probably closer to Joyce's age. And I'm like, well, she's like, yeah, she's a teen. She's like an annoying teenager. That's just what they do, you know? Yeah. And then she has like this incredible weight on her, knowing like what she is and knowing that
mm-hmm.
her family is not really her family. Her memories are, you know, kind of programmed in. And like, I mean, they talk about this a lot in the next episode in The Gift, of like kind of, you know, what it means to be family. Like, is blood more important than, you know, love? Or like, is your chosen family as important as your blood family? And I think obviously the answer is yes, but like, yeah, I mean, that's a lot of weight as a teenager to like have hanging on your shoulders.
She actually handles it with like a certain amount of grace too, to where I was getting frustrated when Buffy was just not telling her everything that was, she was trying to be this weird maternal figure instead of just leveling with her and saying, hey, here's what we need to do in order yeah. to stay in each other's lives.
Yeah.
Let's do it together. Will you help me do this for you or whatever? Because she has this like, and this is, I think, the acting. She has this kind of maturity to her that's buried in all of the sort of like, yeah, teenage signifiers that really kind of frame the character, to where by the end of it, she has to like, you know, well, she just keeps getting kidnapped. So,
you know, and then she runs. She's always getting grabbed.
Yeah.
She does a lot of screaming.
Yeah, she has to watch a lot of people give really long speeches only just to get grabbed again.
Yeah. Well, and like, yeah, she thinks that I love the like the all the time that she spends with Ben and Glory, who by the way are the same person. I don't know if you guys heard
what?
That, but yeah.
Wait, isn't you that mean crazy? That they're hanging out together?
Yeah, they're like,
no, they're the same. So, you know, Dawn thinks that she can get more out of like Ben at one point, and realizes that, you know, Ben is also a selfish asshole when it comes yeah. down to it. And I then is that. Like, bring Glory back, you know? And I love that. I love that she, yeah. like, she realizes that that's kind of a way to manipulate the situation. Like, if there's nothing else she has, she can kind of keep trying to like pull out the other one,
right, and see who can. Yeah I love that moment where he's like, I don't know, it's you or me, kid. And I was like, oh wow, you are just as self-serving as any other fucking asshole out here, you know. And she, and Dawn says like, at least Glory is honest about what she wants and she doesn't care about destroying the world. Mm-hmm. But like, Ben's out there trying to pretend to be like, quote, like good guy.
Yeah, and I mean, how many of those guys are on Buffy? The fake good guys.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them. And they're always letting us down.
Hmm.
Riley,
it almost feels like that's a metaphor
too.
For somebody, but...
Yeah, it's weird.
I'm not going to think about that any further than it needs to be.
Yeah. Remember how Riley was the good guy, and yet he joined the military on some sort of...
To murder
like indigenous demons, and we're supposed to like be like, yeah, he was the best.
It's a UN peacekeeping mission.
Yeah,
you don't understand. They're white helmets. They're delivering aid.
It's true. They're a bunch of socialist demons that are trying to destroy capitalism as we know it in South America.
Yeah, it's just COINTEL in Iran in 1979.
Basically. I mean, that's what it feels like, what Riley was up to.
Yeah, me
too. And then we're supposed to be like, yeah, he was fine. He was a good guy.
Yeah, like, oh, I miss
him. At least he was human.
At least he wasn't a
barely. Vampire.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Do we want to talk about Buffy's catatonia?
Hey there, suckers. It's Leslie. You know, back in my day, I worked at an adult shop in college, so I know a thing or two about fine adult toys, and that's why I really like bunnyshop.com. It's not your average adult store. You know, think of it as your very own adult shop, thoughtfully curated by your fashionable best friend. They take their selection seriously. They handpick each item for their aesthetics, safety, and top-notch quality. Bunny Shop is a modern love shop dedicated to elevating your most intimate moments. And here's the best part, you get to shop online in the comfort of your own home. And if you know me and you know how much I don't like talking to people, you know how much I love that. You're only browsing the best and cutest products out there. Plus, they ship quickly and discreetly, ensuring your little secret stays safe. So no matter where you are in your journey, whether you're a BDSM pro or completely new to the world of sex toys, Bunny Shop has got you covered. Their thoughtfully selected range includes toys, accessories, and wellness products to suit every desire and preference. And you know we love accessibility and inclusivity on the pod. So let go of any shyness and embrace your self-love journey with confidence. Save 20% off your order today when you use code FANGS. That's F-A-N-G-S, all uppercase. So visit bunnyshop.com, BUNNYSHOPPE.com. Yeah, so I wanna I did the thing again where I recorded myself reacting to the show.
Okay.
So in the kind of opening, like even before the title screen, they are trying to get Buffy to snap out of it. And I don't know if this will play right, but I something happens, and here I'll try to play it.
Okay.
I'm willing to wager when all is said and done, Buffy and Max.
Yes! Yes! Take it, bitch!
I knew deep in my bones what you were gonna play.
Yeah,
because
love it.
Spike knows Buffy.
Yeah. Yeah, Spike says, so yeah, Buffy has just like completely withdrawn. She, you know, it was at the end of the last episode where, you know, Willow was like, Buffy, you got to get up. We need you. You need to like, what are you doing? And Buffy is just like, Dawn is gone. I have literally nothing left. I am emotionally like completely shutting my body down. And that's where she is when the show opens. So Spike like smacks the shit out of her. and then says that line about her liking it rough, and then Xander punches the crap out of him, which I was like, hell yeah. And then Willow, with just a word and a look, like moves them with her mind and like fucks up their whole shit. And I just like lost my, I like flooded my basement. I was like, I just lost it. I was like, that is so fucking powerful and cool, and like bat, like Nego Willow is coming, and I'm like, yeah, so excited for that, like, because she's such a cool villain character. So like, oh,
she
boy,
gets so powerful. Yeah, yeah, and, like, you start crazy to see how incredibly powerful she's,
yeah,
gonna
we've
be.
Seen we have seen little breadcrumbs and like moments of like uh-oh, and then this was a very big breadcrumb of like uh-oh, foreshadowing.
Yeah,
like, holy shit.
Yeah, and just like will not take any shit from these two dum-dums who are like fighting over Buffy.
Exactly. And she's done that in the past, you know, when Buffy's been otherwise incapacitated. Like, she has, you know, stepped up into the role of like, you know, telling people like, here, you do this, you do that, we're gonna get through this, and here's why. Like, and those moments are like very, very powerful for sure.
Yeah. I'm so happy. I love these two episodes because also the like other weird guys have been dispensed with, the like crusaders who I don't we were talking about this in the last episode that like they're the last two episodes were just like, what? I forgot all about this part and I am so uninterested. And this is like about the people that we actually care about. And yes,
like
it's, you know, it again, the Scoobies assembling their like most powerful Scooby together and like, you know, sort of saving the day, I guess. And in this case, it gets a lot more complicated, but. But yeah, the Winnebago, like the good stuff.
I did like the Winnebago chase.
yeah,
the extended Winnebago.
Like...
Yeah.
They said that was supposed to be a reference to the stagecoach scene in, oh fuck, what was that movie? It was an old cowboy movie, and I was like, y'all kind of missed the mark with that one.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in the most abstract way, sure.
yeah, it's like sure.
They are quite like, and I understand that California has several different environmental contexts. It's a big state. They do kind of seem to end up in the desert very quickly.
Oh yes, yes.
In an attempt to reenact this, spaghetti western kind of homage, but with crusaders, sort of, but with medieval characteristics. And on top of a Winnebago, which is very, very, they should have said it was a reference to Army of Darkness because it made me think more of Army of Darkness.
100%. Oh, that's a good reference.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
I think the thing that also throws me off, I know it's California, it's literally called Sunnydale, but the last two episodes were extremely bright and I just, I just prefer a dark Buffy world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I'm not a fan of daylight in
a lot of daytime activity. That's true.
Yeah, in the vampire, you know, in the vampire world, I think, you know, the effects that they can afford work better in the dark. So shadows really help, I think, for a lot of these
things. Hide a lot of scenes.
Cover that shit up. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, so Buffy is in her catatonic state, and Willow goes in to like poke around in there.
Don't do that.
Don't go poke around in your friends.
Yeah, no, that seemed very invasive to me. I understand the complexity and the urgency of the situation. Don't go up in my brain, please.
Okay, I wouldn't.
The next time
you go into catatonic state, I'm not going to do it.
Just leave me. Just leave me go. You know.
All right. I'll let you go.
I'll be out in a few hours. It's fine.
I'm busy reliving the same four memories strung together.
The one time, like, I accidentally farted in seventh grade. Like, we all got that one.
That's the only memory. That's just playing over and over and over again. It's like a 10-second loop.
If I want to do anything, I have to like split my brain like fucking, oh my god, like that Star Trek. What do they call that? LR? I can't remember. Anyway.
I don't know. I'm not a nerd.
I'm more like a jock. You know, I'm kind of like a cool. Like
yeah, a I'm definitely the jock of the episode of the podcast. But okay, as much as all the jokes aside about the dreamscape or the brainscape or whatever that's going on with Buffy, I really loved the sort of resolution of it, that like the spot they keep coming back to over and over again where she's like putting the book away is the second that she gave up and like, realized she couldn't do, like, she was like, this is the moment where I was like, I'm actually gonna fail this time,
and like that feeling is kind of relieving.
Yeah,
like just a small second of like, glory will kill me and I'm not gonna be really upset about that.
Yeah, like I'm okay, I'm ready for to be over. Like, I'm sick of all the fighting and the, and like the grief that she's experienced in this season.
And Willow says, like, you know, you deal with the weight of the world, like, and have been since, you know, since you became the Slayer, like, every second of every day. And you, I think you're allowed to give yourself a second of doubt and, you know, wanting to give up, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, that's totally valid and normal. I see you. I hear you, you know.
Yeah. And, like, in between, don't suffocate your sister over and over again with a pillow.
Yeah, like, please don't. Like,
that's like that, yeah, the tonal weirdness that happens in Buffy, like you were saying, Kyle, is like, it's kind of played slightly like a joke. You're like, what?
Like,
it's so, she delivers it so flat, and I get why they're doing it. And it's a it's a style choice, but it's so, it's just, the way she just just gently places it over her, and then she just kind of struggles. oh my god, it's so fucking funny.
I really get the feeling that nobody in the Buffy universe knows how to suffocate somebody.
Like, you don't just gently place a pillow. Oh yeah, because we had two suffocations.
Yeah, so I think this, we're going to talk about, basically we're talking about both of these episodes. It's
we can talk about the gifts, like, too. Which obviously was written and directed by Joss.
Yeah, naturally. So there's a scene, you know, Glory has been beaten down with that goofy fucking Warhammer, like, replica.
Yeah.
Hammer thing. And hammer thing. Hammer thing. Hammer time. And then Ben comes out and Buffy leaves. And Giles is like, you know, she showed you mercy. You know, she would never, you know, harm another human just to, you know, just to ensure that Glory would never come back. And Giles is like, I ain't that kind of girl.
Yeah, I would.
Does, what he does is he just... it's so fucking...
Oh, God.
He just, like, gently pinches his nose.
Yeah. He's just like, if that's the way to kill a person, we would, like, be dying every time, like, every time you blew your nose.
Exactly. I was like, so I got me thinking, like, nobody on the planet Buffyverse knows how to suffocate another human being. Like, that's just an alternate reality where, like, nobody learned how to do that.
Oh. Leslie, would so you like to give a how-to of suffocation?
I mean, it's like at least 4 pounds of pressure on the neck.
Yeah, you gotta crush that pipe.
Yeah, crush that pipe. That's my tip.
This is the Jock Podcast. Crushing pipe.
Yeah, we're crushing pipes.
Thanks for the memories.
Crushing pipes and smashing hammers.
That's me at the X Games crushing pipe.
This is a Barstool Sports podcast. You can't ever leave Boston, Leslie.
God. Oh, Lord. Okay.
Oh, my God.
All right. Do you guys want to roast me about Joel Grey now? Let's just fucking get it over with.
All right. So let me find the text here.
My treaties. Let me go get it off the door that I nailed it to.
Yeah, so we've already established in previous episodes that Leslie thinks Joel Grey can get it.
I don't give y'all shit when you talk about your weird little gremlin crushes. I don't give a shit when you talk about fucking Barry Keoghan drinking the blood out of a cup. I supported you in that. I said that's not my thing, but that's somebody's thing, and I'm thrilled about that.
It's true.
I think Joel Grey, a 75-year-old man, is hot, and everybody's like, oh my god, you are in your whiskey grandpa era.
I mean, you are in your grandpa era, for sure, but I'm not going to give you a hard time about it.
Yeah, no tea, no shade.
Yeah.
At all.
Leslie and I go to karaoke, and they're like, what's that retiree up to?
What's that used boat salesman doing? Yeah. So
like he used boat salesman who's singing Billy Joel.
Why was I also gonna say Billy Joel?
It's just perfect.
It's grandpa music, man.
Yeah. Because it works.
Oh, he's moving out. And onto Leslie's couch. Or into the top bunk.
Yeah, baby. If the top bunk's knocking or rocking,
No, he just gets his own bunk on a third story.
Whoa.
Just keep stacking sandwiched. It.
That's wild. Yeah, there's a lot of stacks over here. Anyway, so Leslie sent a text of a picture of Joel Grey holding his the knife out.
Holding a knife.
Holding a knife and said, anyone else a little fear horny?
Fear horny, one word, yeah.
I mean, he does look pretty dapper. Alone. Doc looks good.
Yeah, he's a very elegant looking man.
Yeah.
So this is when we realize that we still don't really know what he is. He is a demon, obviously, because he
has a tail. You
know, he has a tail, and he's got a long tongue, which I'm not.
Oh, right.
That. And
that's why Leslie's really into Doc. A long tongue.
Just saying. But yeah, he wants Glory to succeed. Yeah. So Spike and Xander go to him for information on Glory, and so he just basically tries to attack them because he wants Glory to succeed. And he has a box with, what did the box have in it?
I don't know. I completely forgot. Every time I think about boxes on this show, I think about the spiders that the mayor ate. That's all I can think about. I'm like, every box is filled with mayor spiders.
Delicious, yeah. Mayor spiders.
Yeah.
Full of protein.
There were a lot of items. There were a lot of items.
You know what? I think it had either like a book or a scroll or some information about Glory, how to beat her. And that's why Giles said at the end, like, the bloodletting thing.
There's a note in there that says Glory, yeah, how to beat her. Number one.
Drawn stick figures, and it's like crayon blood dripping down the page. And it's like, yeah, they realize that.
On the back, it says Ben is Glory, Glory is Ben.
There's a diagram.
It's like written on the back of a Polaroid, like Memento.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
Don't believe her lies. Joel Grey throws the box into the fire, but Spike fishes it out. And then fucking Xander just runs a sword through his ass.
Yeah.
Just unceremoniously just jam hammers him right in the solar plexus. But it's going to take a lot more than that to bring old Jolie Gray down.
That's true. Ram jammered him. And then there's that like fun little moment, you know, that's like a,
yeah.
A fun little monster trope where it cuts to Joel Grey and his eyes open and they're all like weird, yeah. And demon-y. Oh, love it. Yeah.
Have any of y'all put a whole eye like contact in before?
No, I've never done that.
Me neither.
Is it fun? Does it make you feel like a demon?
Listeners, if you've ever like, I don't know, cosplayed or something and you had to put a whole ass eyeball contact in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like not just on the irisy part, but like on the whole white of your eye.
Really? Have them? What shape are they?
They're like almonds? I mean, they're like circles, but like way fucking bigger. They're like the size of golf balls.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I am gonna venture to say that my eyes are not as big as golf balls. I don't know if that's true.
Well, yeah. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's a lot going on in there that I don't know about.
There's so much going on inside your body, Kate. You don't even know.
Let me tell you, I keep getting all these ads for Kegel exercises, and they get weirder and weirder and weirder.
It's like, what do you know that I don't?
Yeah, it looks like there's a like a brony and knot in there, and I'm like, what's happening?
Oh god.
Yeah. I once bought like fake vampire fangs on I bought fake vampire fangs because of like an Instagram ad, and they were like, you would like activate them with your tongue, like you'd press like a little button and the fangs would come down, and I thought they would be really fun, but they were like, they're like plastic white, so they just look insane in like a normal person's mouth. It does not work at all. That was very sad, but it was like, they were like $18.
That's rough.
Yeah. I thought I could freak out all of my friends, but instead I just freaked myself out.
I want to talk about I want to talk about this fucking like duct tape, plastic, plywood, SpaceX looking ass scaffolding that they built, I guess, in the middle of Sunnydale that nobody like,
saw.
They didn't have a, they had to have a permit for that. Had to.
No,
right?
Glory, no, Glory and the Minions built it.
You know, the government is corrupt. You can't like,
that's true. We don't know who's
the mayor. Yeah, we don't know who the new mayor is.
Yeah, I can see the mayor of Sunnydale being like a giant trebuchet in the middle of looking thing in the middle. Sure, you want to build an evil spire? Well, we need some good press.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, they, I mean, like, the newspapers are loving it. They have so much to talk about the next day.
It's just insane.
I mean, it is a funny to continue the like, how big is Sunnydale kind of conversation.
Exactly. Like this huge construction site where they could erect like a 100 foot like just absolute OSHA violation, like
it's like 100%. It's like the highest high dive.
Yeah, it that does. It looks like
that's what I think. Well, and like, there's diving later.
I was about to say, it does, as a matter of fact. I mean, someone tests that out.
Yeah, someone finds out what that's like. A lot of people fall off.
A lot of falling, yeah.
Three people fall off this thing. Actually, more, I guess. Because Glory kind of falls off.
Like, 100% not, you know, structurally sound. I just don't,
No, built by minions and people who had their minds sucked, I guess.
I guess. Who knows? Oh, Lord. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. Like, what did you need that for? You couldn't open a portal that was on the ground?
Ground portal.
Ground portal. They do this shit all the time.
Well, you know, like, I was thinking a lot about this, actually, that, like, you know, Glory is an old god, so unlike someone like Spike, ritual is, like, super important to her. Because there's this moment that when Dawn has to, like, change into her, like, ritual robe, and she's like, why do I have to do this? And it's just part of the ritual. And it's, like, the saddest moment where you see her, like, putting down her just, like, regular teen clothes. You know, and she has them, like, folded nicely on the chair and then, like, puts her sneakers under the chair. You know, and, like, is now in her, like, key. Like, now she's a key. She's not Dawn anymore. And it's so sad. But I think the ritual of the whole thing is extremely important to Glorificus and all of her splendiferous minions.
Oh, man.
Because they're old as shit. They love this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not punk rock like Spike.
No, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Oh, the in-universe lore that makes me the most angry in a jealous anger is the idea that because you're a certain kind of a monster, that means you're allowed to smoke cigarettes without consequences.
Oh yeah.
And I fucking hate that that's even a fictional I hate that fictional made up people get to do that and I don't. I have to quit. I had to quit smoking. Which is awesome. Yeah. Which yep. Everyone loves it and it's the best.
Yeah.
No one hates it.
Except for you.
I love cigarettes so much and don't get to have them because they're horrible for you. And bullshit.
Sometimes I'll be like walking to the bus or like work or something and I will catch a whiff of a Jarum black menthol clove cigarette.
Damn.
And I will just immediately like be transported back to like fucking 2012 when I like still had like a banging body and like beautiful hair and like went to an emo night and like just listened to Depeche Mode and fucking like made a shirt out of fishnet tights. Like,
I used to do that.
Your
head
through the crotch part and then putting your arms through where the leggies go. God damn, I miss smoking cigarettes. Fuck me.
Yeah, that sounds like
my youth as well. Yeah.
My youth.
Yeah, like smoking a clove and then licking your lips.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The best thing ever.
Absolutely.
It's too bad they put holes in your lips.
Yeah, they literally turn your shit into squeeze.
It's a shame.
Are you just going cold turkey or are you doing shit to wean yourself?
Oh, I quit a while ago.
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah.
Good for you. I'm actually very proud of you.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Thank you. Appreciate it. I don't know why I brought that point up. Oh no. It just made me
it was a very funny scene of him lighting up and there was clearly a no smoking sign behind him and
I liked
very
that.
It's because he's punk rock. Yeah, because he don't give a shit about rituals, the end of the world, smoking cigs where he's not supposed to smoke.
He's just down to clown till he's dust on the ground.
He's a monster, but Buffy treats him like a man.
Oh my god.
That one really got me, even though it was so cheesy.
Because, like, she fucking doesn't. She, like, negs him all the time.
Yeah, and, like, but, like,
what a fucking monster he is.
She, like, truly, I don't think she trusts him about anything else except for Dawn. I think she knows that, like, he cares so much about Dawn that he is, like, ready to square up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, be the dad.
Oh, he's not the stepdad, but the dad that stepped up. He's not the step vampire.
He's the vamp who stepped up, yeah.
Oh,
man.
What could have been?
I think he likes his, and deep down, he likes his chin measuring contests that he has from his cuck chair or whatever with Buffy's enemies. He has to just make sure that his chin is bigger than Ben's.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, get it out there.
That actor has a pretty big chin.
Dude, he looks like he should be on an island somewhere, like Easter Island.
Or like a Dick Tracy villain or something.
Fantastic Four. Oh shit. Oh man.
Should we talk about blood?
Okay.
I giggle. You know what? I mean, this episode is all about bleeding, you know, how, like, basically the whole ritual is that Dawn has to slowly bleed out, basically. Mm. You see her, you don't really see where it's coming from, I guess, because it's like a, you know, YA show, but you see blood, which I feel like doesn't normally happen in this show.
Yeah.
Like, you start to watch her bleed out, which is really intense.
It was a lot more gruesome. Like, there were moments, like, they've done, you know, goofy, like, fight scenes, you know, all the time. And we see, like, you know, they obviously, the people die. But, like, you know, like Xander running Joel Grey through with a sword, and then like they're fighting the minions, and like Giles is like fucking like going through guys with a halberd or whatever. And it was like, God, that's very violent. Like it wasn't as goofy this time. Like it felt very real.
The scales did tip, but it is also important to remember that at one point a giant wrecking ball came through the wall and boom.
And like a giant wrecking ball, which is a stand-in for Xander's bowling skills.
Yeah, oh God, what was
he's like
the...
still got it or something. Okay. I don't know.
I know exactly what he said, and I will say it word for word.
Okay. Good,
thank you.
The glorified bricklayer picks up a spare.
Oh,
that was right off the dome, by the way. I have that shit. And I can't remember what my grandmother's voice sounds like, but I remember that line word for word.
So. Yeah, that was a good moment. It was very, it is true, it was gory for the time period, for the time slot when it aired on television, for the subject matter, for the show as usual, and then also, you know,
yeah,
you know, like, Hanna-Barbera hammer.
I was about to say there's only like a fucking like sproing sound missing, like boing, 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 like. Or like Glory like sits up and there's fucking like Tweety birds like flying around her head, like, oh, look at the stars.
I feel like they were thinking of me when they made sure that they're like, we're gonna weave a really heavy narrative throughout this entire season.
But don't
and do a
panic.
A lot of dialogue heavy stuff. It's gonna be very intense. But yeah, just be patient. It was worth it.
100%. Yeah. Oh my God. Good shit.
Oh. Oh, you know what I just remembered? I was going to read part of a poem.
Oh, yeah. I brought that up.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I guess.
So, I mean, we're talking about blood and death and stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, spoiler, Buffy dies at the end. I'm laughing with discomfort.
You're laughing because there's two more fucking seasons of this shit.
Well, whatever. But I'm laughing because it's feelings make me uncomfortable. And like the first time I watched this, I bawled. Like, yeah. I remember crying so hard at the end of this. It is a really intense ending of a season and pretty beautiful.
I agree. It wasn't too schmaltzy, you know what I mean? It did have the like, oh, take care of everybody and blah blah blah, and blah, blah, blah. But it felt, I mean, this is a lot to do with Sarah Michelle Gellar's acting, because even in voiceover, like, it is very natural sounding, it's very heartfelt, it's very real. And then they have can we talk about the headstone real quick before we do this beautiful bow?
Oh, yeah.
The headstone reads, Buffy Joyce Summers, beloved sister, beloved friend. She saved the world a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is a perfect intro to this poem that I am obsessed with by Julia Block, who lives in Philly right now, who I think teaches at UPenn, called I Dream I'm the Death of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And it's a long, we'll put the link to the whole poem in the show notes, because it's a long poem, but I'll read I Dream I'm the Death of Buffy, which is like the first stanza. All right. Let me get my poetry voice on. The world is full of fracture. Buffy is slow to catch on. The glossy print in reds and browns is a rehearsal for the end of the world. All dressed up in the Christmas lights of love, she is my one true sister, my moral enemy, adolescence. She saved the world a lot. I'm in the dress of blood. I open my fingers on the scaffold, still here, still here, still here. In a room without you, I'm empty. In a room empty of you. When I wake up, I'm surfacing. Blood makes you hard.
So I love good. That. Yeah. Oh, that's powerful.
And it's so Buffy because it's like, you know, there's like the referential, she saves the world a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like what you were saying at the beginning, Kyle, that like the essence of this show, its ability to be extremely silly and extremely profound all at the same time in in sometimes like insane ways.
Yeah.
Like, I think is why it like touches so many people, you know.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it has the I mean, it has the air of like if it's cultural contemporaries, so the kind of like in the there's a clear sort of like stylistic through line. There's like you can periodize this very clearly or whatever, but the thing that's so I think remarkable about it, and the thing that the poem touches on, is the experience of adolescence as this genuinely very absurd, like strange process of socialization. Mm-hmm. That like Buffy in a lot of ways, either consciously or not, is commenting on the like strange evolution of categories that we go through when we grow up. And the reason why it gets so kind of silly and funny in season five is because several characters experience what seems to be the entire stage of like child and like adolescent sexual development through early adulthood. And then all of a sudden by the end of it, Buffy is a concerned parent. which is like, you know, on the one hand really funny, because I mean it's a show about high schoolers, they have to graduate eventually. They did a good job of like weaving it into a post high school environment. Yeah. But what I think is so resonant about this, the way that they framed it, is that there's no there's this sort of like universal instability of truth and you know, like social truth, right? You don't really like, you go through a period as you get older and in after immediately after adolescence where you have to figure out what it means to be both a different person and the same person, but as an adult, and all of this sort of like clarifying that happens gets really messy. And I don't want to speak for everybody, but makes people do some weird shit. Personally, I did some weird shit when I was in this age group. And it's really relatable yeah. to like figure out a way to sort of like sublate that into a like, yeah, you're talking, Buffy has this construction of, you know, family, this like strange or I guess just different family dynamic and, mm-hmm. you know, these sort of like the choices that people have to make as the show goes along. And it gives like, honestly, not the worst, like it gives a pretty decent sort of like assessment of like what it means to go through some really devastating and difficult things and make hard choices, and it like valorizes the I think the universal aspects of adolescence,
yeah,
in a really like in a way that like, you know, I like that the things that I liked the most when I was younger in a way that those other shows or films or whatever do as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, like, you know, taking, like, the highs and lows of adolescence and, like, amping them up into, like, the highs and lows of being a vampire slayer on the Hellmouth during adolescence yeah. is, like, so spot on, because that's, like, how you feel yep. when you're a teenager, you know, like, the whole thing of like when, you know, Buffy and Angel are talking and she says something like, you know, I love you and it makes me want to die or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's talking about like actually life and death, but like as a teenager, it feels like everything is life and death, you know?
Yeah. Like just even having a crush is like, you know, if they don't like you back, it's literally the end of the world.
Right. And then, yeah, and putting that through, like, the lens of, you know, vampires and demons, it, like, they get to get away with a lot, I think, on this show that, like, you know, obviously other, like, young adult shows can't necessarily get away with because it's, like, hidden in genre a little bit. Mm.
Yeah, that's always been helpful for all kinds of, like, I mean, I think that's why the sort of queer readings of Buffy work so well, because mm-hmm. there's, like, you know, that the language of monstrosity has always been present and that kind of, like, useful for that perspective in genre fiction. And yeah. also, like, my teenage crushes were always devastating. It was always bad news.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I was not allowed to be attracted to literally any of the people that I was attracted to
yeah.
when I was a teenager. It was the worst experience of my entire life, was developing a crush on somebody.
Yeah.
It really did feel like life was ending. I'm just like, I can't, because this isn't going to work. This is not going to work out.
Yeah. Like, you might as well be a monster, yeah. you know, like, in your head. And so, yeah, like, I think that's why Buffy works so well and, like, why people hang on to it for so long, you know, because, like, we're not really experiencing, like, teen feelings anymore. But it's still, like, make sense.
Yeah.
I feel like, yes, you're not, like, directly feeling those teen mm-hmm. feelings anymore, unless you're, like, completely maladjusted, which there are people out
there.
Go to, like,
therapy.
yeah. But I feel like those feelings, you know, you can still relate to them.
And, yeah.
Like, even though you're older, like, you still, that's, like, this is going to sound really shitty, but that's what makes, like, Carly Rae Jepsen's music so popular. Like, you know, we're all in our 30s.
No,
and shit.
You're right. Yeah.
Like, riding her bike to somebody's house that she has a crush on and, like, seeing the lights in his window on or whatever. And it's like, you know, nobody would do that in their 30s or they'd fucking get the cops called on them. But, you know, it's such a, like, romanticized, like, nostalgic idea of what it was like to be a teenager that it's, like, still, you look back on it fondly, even though it's, like, kind of cringe. But, you know, it's sweet cringe. And I feel like that's a lot of what Buffy is all the time, too. It's, like,
oh, it is very sweet cringe. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Those kinds of relations and, like that pop music is perfect for this. The sort of, like, visceral reaction, the building of our kind of world, the world of Call Me Maybe is is universal. The fundamental of our entire, like, social fabric is woven through the, like, the question of, like, how other people see you and mm-hmm. the lack.
Do you like me? Yeah, exactly. I still feel that. Like, I go through, like, that with people still.
Yeah,
right.
That, like, you know, like, I obviously don't love this person because I've had, you know, 30 plus years of experience of knowing what actual, like, romantic love feels like, but I do really, 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 really like you.
Or at least, like, right now.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Blood still makes me hard.
I heard Spike say that and I was like, oh man, that's gonna be Kate's whole day. Like, I got your fucking number.
I mean, it's true. I was, like, an extremely, like, gothy, morbid, freaky kid, and I'm the same way as an adult, you know. Like, I've learned, like you said, I've gone to therapy for many years. And I've learned that, like, the world isn't ending every day. But I definitely thought the world was ending every day when I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it might as well, you know, it's like it might as well have been.
I might as well have been
on a hell mouse.
I think when I was 15 was the first time that I saw Evil Dead 2. mm-hmm. And in that movie, as well as the other films, Bruce Campbell gets covered in it. There's an incredible amount. It's very they're very bloody movies.
Oh yeah.
I think it would be probably irresponsible, or at least not very rigorous of me, to separate my intense, incredible horny love for Bruce Campbell from my exposure to him initially through eventually through movies like Bubba Hotep and stuff, but as well as the television series Burn Notice that my father loves. And I'm like, oh, I'll watch this show. It has Bruce Campbell in it. But yeah, no, I can't help but think it's a similar sort of adolescent experience of horror and horny that that everyone is owed in whatever form, you know, with a big, long, weird reptile tongue or not.
See, Leslie, you're valid.
Everyone is owed this perspective. They're owed these formative feelings and experiences.
Hell yes. Yeah. I think those are incredibly important feelings. And like, yeah, so many people watched Buffy as teenagers and were like, I'm feeling some weird feelings about, you know, like Willow beating Angel when she's a vampire, or like I don't know, like Spike and Drusilla chaining up somebody or something, you know, like there are so many things that happen in Buffy that you could never get away with if it were just like some BDSM scene like of a bunch of teenagers, you know, like that would not happen. But because they get to like put it slightly under the veil of like, this is what a vampire would do, because yeah, the fantasy. Yeah.
As a vampire, I mean, that's vampire fiction. Like, vampire fiction has been that way. It has been like the expression of like fucking Victorian Gothic horniness for as long as it's been a genre. That is like, and if there's one thing that I love about horror vanguard, it's that there's an opportunity.
Stop. It's like Ben and Glory.
Oh my god, Kyle is horror vanguard.
What?
Actually, it's not public yet, but I am going to be on horror vanguard more regularly.
Whoa! Oh, yeah. Yeah, you heard it here first, folks.
You did.
Do you want me to edit that out, Kyle?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
It's not like it's not a secret, it's just we haven't recorded the first episode yet.
Oh, but, hell yeah.
I'll be on the Patreon this coming week, I think. Ooh, which right now it's the 7th, so whenever after that. And then yeah, we'll do our I won't say the first movie that we're going to do, but it was my choice, and okay. It is just another entry in my body switching trilogy.
Love that
shit. Yeah.
And I'm here for it.
I love bodies.
I'm excited to listen.
You love that shit. You are horny for body switching.
But it's somebody's thing, and I fucking love that.
That's it. That's, yeah. Me watching, looking at Barry Keoghan drinking blood out of a Buffy the Vampire Slayer mug. I'm into it.
That did it for so many people. That did it. I was like sincerely so happy that people like found their kink. I'm like, God, like, do you know like how long you could go through in your life and not find your fucking sex thing?
Yeah.
And for you to find it now.
Imagine if your sex thing was so obscure. Yeah. And you saw it in a magazine one day and you were like, whoa.
Fucking finally. God.
Yeah, like, what if just off the top of my head, people were horny for car crashes? And like,
no one is. That is not a thing.
They definitely.
I think that would be a great short story. And later.
Yeah.
Later,
That reminds. Actually, it reminds me of the Siskel and Ebert review of Crash. Was basically like, no one is horny for car crashes. That it's not a real thing. That's why this movie is interesting.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And it's like, no, that's not why it's interesting.
You did not understand this.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Love it.
I find so something that's interesting.
Yeah.
Is that like we obviously knew Buffy was going to die eventually. She'll be fine. Like, listeners, don't worry. She'll be
fine.
Don't
give it away.
She's just sleeping.
She's just sleeping.
But I thought it was interesting that they have like telegraphed this in previous episodes. Like, there's that scene in Graduation Day, like literally two seasons ago, where Buffy's having Faith, I think, or whoever. Somebody's having a dream where Faith and Buffy are like folding, like making the bed for Dawn, which you don't know at the time that she's coming. But Faith says something about like counting down from 7-3-0.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, what the fuck does that mean? So 7-3-0 is exactly 730 days.
Oh,
or like two years. So like two seasons, 2 years later, Buffy dies. So like counting down from 7-3-0. Is counting down the days until she dies.
Whoa. And you just did like a scene, Twin Peaks thing.
Like, whoa, that gum.
Whoa.
Like.
26 years later.
But there's another scene in Buffy has another dream, it's when she is having the dream about being in class with Riley, and she's like, he's like, oh, when I kiss you, it'll make the sun go down. Remember that?
Yeah, unfortunately.
There's a moment where the clock says 7:30 and Tara's like, the clock is wrong. And it's like, the clock is wrong because it's not 730, you know, 730.
Yeah,
it's actually,
yeah.
So it's like, that's very interesting. So I like that they did plant these like little Easter eggs for you to like kind of like almost like Sixth Sense style, like go back and like look for the clues. That's,
you're like,
that was very, very cool.
Yeah, that's crazy. I did not know that. And I've watched this so many times.
I really appreciate the culture warriors in the continuity section of the Buffy Wikipedia.
Oh, God.
Who are doing the Lord's work.
Yeah, what are they up to right now, Kyle?
The continuity for The Weight of the World includes they gave an explanation of why Dawn didn't remember Ben's transformation in Blood Ties. Upon seeing the first Slayer, Willow recalled when she has tried to kill all of them in their dreams in Restless. It just ties together a lot of the, for someone like me, a Buffy novice, a freshman at Sunnydale, a freshman who I failed freshman year since high school. I appreciate
I forget that stuff sometimes too. I'll be like, wait, when did they, because we've been watching this over a very long time at this point.
Yeah, you know, even though we are going at it, you know, quicker, I would say, than, you know, watching it week by week, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
It's still like stuff, you know. And like, I, you know, my brain has fucking, I could dry spaghetti with the holes in my fucking brain like a colander. So it's,
that's,
you know,
what I
sometimes
did the last time
back.
I went into your brain.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like a nice,
I just poked some holes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like old spaghetti monkey head over here.
I should really get some spaghetti in here.
Spaghetti head rising, they call me. Yep.
What's up, spaghetti head? Okay.
We have to talk about the biggest fucking thing.
Is it
the
Xander and
fucking
Anya?
I would fucking rather die. I would rather die. I would rather the world end than to have to marry that man.
Aww. Well, don't worry. It doesn't work out.
I know.
But that is an insane, that was a, I don't, you know, if that was a scene between two other people, I would probably have enjoyed it a lot. Like, I enjoy Anya, and like, I just don't enjoy anything about Xander at all at this point, so it's really hard to watch a scene like that, but it is funny because, like, terror sex is a thing, and I feel like it's like terror marriage proposal. It's like the next step, I guess, above terror sex.
I don't, Kyle, what did you think?
I believe made my feelings on Xander known on this podcast previously. I believe I blamed him for a certain movement of concerns, gamers.
Yes.
Who are just ethics and gaming journalism, I believe.
100% he would be on the anti-Sweet Baby Ink train by now. Like, not to date this podcast, but he would be one of those, like, fucking, I'm just asking questions. Like, why are they, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, I have subscribed to Xander's YouTube channel, purely ironically. just to see what all the hubbub is about. I found their storyline throughout the season. I find that they, in the way that the Joss Whedon was imagining the Xander is the root of the Joss Whedon dialogue bonanza, I'll call it, that we experienced for about 10 years.
Yes,
in like every other movie, there was a Xander there commenting on why everything is funny or offering little retorts. It started off a trend, and I actually really do believe this. It started off a trend in film that is directed toward not just like people complain about exposition in movies nowadays, which is valid. People are constantly telling me things instead of showing them. It's really annoying. Mm-hmm. It happens so frequently, especially in like bigger popular movies.
Yeah. Like it'll be like 10 minutes at the beginning. You're like, cool. Thanks.
Or like, what is character? They're so slutty or mean or whatever. It's like, okay, can we see them being that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Ben is glory.
Glory.
Wait, what? Right.
Yeah, I still don't understand it, but I wanted to sound smart.
That's my whole fucking life.
Oh man, I like the what the implications of how long it took me to get that joke.
Oh God. Yeah, it's just it's just lazy. A lot of it is. And you know, like comedy like good comedy still takes a little bit of effort.
Yeah.
And like when you can't even do that, when it's just lazy, it's just so it just fucking sucks. Like, it just sucks. And like, they, you know, ever since Xander like stopped being a fucking douchebag as much, now that he's like with Anya, he's just so fucking boring and lazy. Yeah. And it's like, what do you even do?
This is the season where he got split into the good and the cool and the scared Xander. Right at one point.
Oh yeah, there's an episode where he's like him and his real life twin brother share like they got their consciousness gets like split and he ends up being like cool responsible Xander.
It was interesting to watch them do that with the Xander character because it really put on display the sort of issue that the corner they wrote themselves into early on. They characterized him and like he served such a particular role that like I feel like you can get away with in a film because eventually a film is over.
Yeah.
But television, this is a television show that has 20 something episodes per season.
And they're like an hour long. It's a lot of TV.
You have to just talk about, I think that that's my real conspiratorial theory, is that the reason why they put in so many goofy explanations of weird objects that you see in one scene and never see again is because they didn't want to put as much. They're running out of a runway when it comes to the Xander proposing at weird times. He didn't have, like, his stories, he didn't have much of one.
No. And, like, at some point, I think that in the next season, when Willow goes into Dark Willow, he's, like, her foil, because supposedly Xander is the heart of the Scoobies, which has never made any sense. Like, thank
Sorry,
you.
Sorry, I'm making a fart sound. I'll mute myself.
No, you have to leave that in. No, it doesn't make any sense. He doesn't have a lot of heart. You know, he's always, you know, sort of like vacillating. He can't make a decision. Like, he doesn't have a real strong moral center, except for, like, boobs, I guess, you know? Like, there's a really good episode about Anya in, I think, season 7, where you kind of learn how badass and amazing she was. And now she's, like, stuck in this human body trying to be a trad capitalist. And it's, like, such a bummer. Because she's really funny, but, like...
Yeah,
it's a bummer. It's like she's such a tragic figure, honestly, because, like,
yeah, it just sucks what she lost to be, like, just the girlfriend, you know.
I am obsessed with the scene where she articulates the kind of, like, she very neatly articulates the angle of virtue ethics within capitalist modernity.
Yeah.
she cuts straight to the core of, like, this is a continuation of the Enlightenment thought, but with this kind of, like, you know, turn on it toward, like, very American turn on it toward, like, a politics of virtue and self-sufficiency, because this is the moral center of the market, and the market dictates morality and whatever. And I'm just like, man, she summed, like, that up pretty quickly. If only she had been a little more amoral, I would have been like, dang, this is just like Atlas Shrugged, but on TV. That's great. We know I am a well-documented libertarian culture, like, hate watcher slash honestly not a hate watcher. I just find it so interesting. So I'd like them to just lean into that if they're going to make choices like that in television shows.
100%. Like, go big or go home. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Just lean into the cool aspects of the character you made, or make your full left turn or right turn, I guess, in this case.
I would love to see Anya on, like, a fucking, like, Alex Jones.
That would make a lot of sense. Show.
Yeah, I think she'd fucking crush it.
You're gonna write her into the last season of Yellowstone.
Oh god. They canceled the fucking Slayer podcast audio drama, so it's not like they got anything else to do. Sorry, I'm so fucking bitter. Bastards. I'm so bitter. I'm sorry. Those fucking assholes.
Yeah.
David Zaslav. I don't know if he had anything to do with it, but I'm just pissed at him.
Just
for
put him
reasons.
In a vat. Yeah.
Send him to the moon.
Push him off of a really tall diving platform made by wrinkly minions.
Push him off a cliff and have him, like, dangle in the air for, like, 2 seconds until he looks down and then actually falls. All right. Do we have any other thoughts and feelings we want to share?
I know this is such a tangent, and I mentioned it before, but I looked it up and now I can't stop thinking about it. And I just have to read part of this review for Crash from 1996 by Robert Ebert.
Awesome. Yes. This is right up my fucking alley.
All right. I'm really excited. I reread this, like, every couple of months, because it makes me laugh so hard, because he's so sure of himself. Now, of course, there is no connection between eroticism and automobile accidents. Show me a man who can become aroused while aiming onto the oncoming lane at 60 miles per hour, and I'll show you a man whose mind is not on the road. Even sadomasochists require a degree of control. The idea of deliberately seeking death in a speeding car is not attractive to anyone.
What?
Those who seek it want suicide, not ecstasy. Crash is about characters entranced by a sexual fetish that, in fact, no one has. Cronenberg has made a movie that's pornographic in form, but not in result. Take out the cars, the scars, the crutches, scabs, and wounds, and substitute the usual props of sex films, and you'd have a porno movie. But Crash is anything but pornographic. It's about the human mind, about the way we grow enslaved by the particular things that turn us on and forgive us our trespasses.
I am so fucking speechless.
Right? It's just such a, it is an incredibly what? Confident and incredibly confused review.
And incredibly incorrect.
Yeah, it just makes me laugh every time. I've read it so many times and it makes me laugh so hard because it's like, this is a yeah, the confidence that only a straight white man could have about something.
Like, because I don't have these feelings, no one on the planet has these feelings. Like, holy shit.
Incredible.
They have sex together in most of the possible pairings, including homosexual. That's my new favorite. I know I'm
homosexual.
I know I'm literally on recording a podcast right now, but you know I'm reading this.
It's such a good. It's like I encourage everyone.
That's why I went quiet.
I encourage everyone to read the Crash 19. I thought it was 1996, but 1997 review.
You know what I want to do, Kate? We'll do this for the Patreon, and if you would like to listen, then you can subscribe at the $5.
Oh hell yeah!
Here, patreon.com/fangspodcast, or just go to fangs.zone and there's a link to Martin.
Get
Patreon
in the fang zone.
What I want to do is like an hour of just sharing our favorite like movie reviews, because there's one that he fucking wrote about the Pokemon movie in 2000 where he talks about like a little boy trying to teach him how to play Pokemon, but the way that he fucking describes it, like the card game, it is like it's so fucking convoluted that I think a little boy just fucking scammed.
Every time I find a Pokemon, I have to give this child $5.
He says some shit like by the end of the round, he had all of my cards, and I was like, that's not how fucking Pokemon works. You old timey shithead. Like,
yeah. Some kid told him to buy like 20 packs of Pokemon.
Yeah.
And then was like, okay, well, you have to give that one to me. Also that one. That one too.
Okay, now we play a game. It's called Steal from You.
Steal from Roger Ebert. Well,
okay, I've watched 800,000 movies. How could I possibly be scammed by this small?
Yeah.
Shout outs to that child, now surely an adult.
Yeah.
100%. Who did that? That's awesome.
Oh, I love it.
I'm going to tell my friends on the other movie podcast about that.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, if you want me to come on and talk about fucking Pokemon 2000 I could do a tight like 4 hours.
Whoa.
I think it could probably
4 hours.
I brought my scientific diagrams talking about the birth of Mewtwo.
Yeah, 100%. Like, if they're, you know, if they all come from eggs, like, what the fuck is milk coming out of Miltank's udders? Like, because it's not milk. I'll tell you that. If they're coming from an egg, they're not mammals.
Is
coming out of those udders? Okay, sorry.
What if it's eggs?
No, it's definitely not.
Okay.
Interesting.
It is a milky white substance, but...
Yolks. wait, what's the stuff that's in egg yolk that's milky white? I mean, not an egg yolk, a white. Okay, goodbye.
Right, that's gonna do it for us. Thanks so much for coming on to the show. You know, you are such a treasure.
Oh, no!
I'm so happy that you're here with us. Do you have anything that you want to plug aside from, guys, swear to God, if you're not listening to Horror Vanguard, you are doing yourself a disservice culturally.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is the dog's pajamas.
Yeah, you should listen to The Dog's Pajamas, my new podcast. listen to I'm always happy to come on. I'm glad we managed to make it work. And it's a nice relief from writing about very serious and difficult things. Mm-hmm. Listen to Horror Vanguard, listen to a podcast called All Gamers Are Bastards, which is ramping up to have a decent year. That show is growing and I'm grateful for it. So if you like a show, if you don't like video games, it's fine. It's a show that has the word gamers in it, but is only tangentially actually related to video games. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Uh-huh. We talk about a lot of other things. I guess the only thing that I want to say is I would like to read more of this review. It's like a porno movie made by a computer. It downloads gigabytes of information about sex. It discovers our love affair with cars, and it combines them in a mistaken algorithm. I admired it, although I cannot say I liked it. It goes on a bit long. Afterwards, I found myself wishing a major director would lavish this kind of love and attention on a movie about my fetishes.
Oh, I remember this part now. Oh, what an incredible,
sentence.
He unfortunately has not put a list.
Oh, my God.
But I almost want to apologize for being happy that he got scammed earlier, because that's the real, that's a real baller move.
You know, it's one of his fetishes getting scammed by kids.
Uh-oh.
You know what's fucking hysterical is that his description of like a computer spitting out a fucking fucked up algorithmic movie,
mm-hmm,
is what is fucking happening now with AI. Maybe he was like prognosticating a little bit there. Holy
Maybe
shit.
Maybe he was a robot.
Oh my God. The fucking...
We didn't even talk about Buffy bot.
I know, we didn't talk about the bot.
How did we not talk about the fucking robot?
I didn't even give a shit. I just thought it was funny that Glory was like, did anybody else know she was a robot?
I appreciated that the robot had some like sort of butch kind of look compared to Buffy's like high femme look after.
Right, yeah, her very crisp ribbed cotton sweater.
Yeah, I liked that.
Good G-O-O-D stuff. if you want to get links to our, social media accounts, again, with the Patreon, grab the episode on your podcatching app of choice. You can check it all out at fangs.zone. And thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next time on Fangs for the Memories. See ya, suckers.